Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening, everybody? Well, here we are again. We've been away for a minute, and we're back. It is the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. This is Thursday edition. You know, we're trying out different things, all different kinds of additions to stuff, and this is a Thursday edition of the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. You know, sometimes you know those people that have my phone just ringing, and funny little aside, you have some friends who just have the worst timing in the world. You ever have one of those friends? Always calls you at the wrong time. Just joking. Anyway, so this is our first in a couple of weeks. Like I said, we got a lot to talk about. Impeachment trials, dude, getting off. Now Donald Trump is talking all kind of trash, trying to let his people, he's running amok. He's running amok. But then we always knew this would be the case because once his co-conspirators, Kate, gave him the go-ahead to just run through the law, we always knew this would be the case. But you got to respect this gangster. You got to respect the man's gangster. Let's bring in the fellas here. First, let's go with Byron Saunders. Byron, how you doing this evening?
Well, I'm doing just great, guys. Thank you. I'm here in Lackland Air Force Base in Texas, in San Antonio, Texas. And I'm with two of America's finest, Cody McMillan, who is Army Reserve, and my son, Benjamin C. Saunders, who just graduated to get his Airman's Wings. He's Airman Second Class. And I'm so proud of my son with his mom. And we came down here to San Antonio to be a witness. You know, it's very special to have those of us who can defend our country and the young people who are willing to take that stand. You know, no burn spurs, none of that stuff, none of that silliness in trying to get deferments. They owned up, they ponied up, took the oath, and went through the training. And it's an honor and a ceremony that I hope someday you all can bear witness to see our young folks who really are committed to the fealty of protecting the Constitution, protecting the country, protecting those freedoms that we have come to anticipate and expect. So I'm really awed, and I'm in honor, and I'm very proud, a very proud father today to see a fulfillment of my son come alive. And you're right. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, the impeachment and all that's going on. But you know what? I feel better today because I know this country's got two men who are protecting us with all their might, heart, and soul, and body.
Right on, right on. And that's definitely encouraging for us to hear. You know, I was thinking earlier today, it's ironic you talking about that, about the military and things like that. You know, I was in ROTC for maybe a semester in college. And just bottom line, you know, you really learn some fantastic things in the military. You learn some pretty cool stuff, you know, and a lot of people, I don't know, growing up maybe, and I don't know about you guys, but a lot of people, and I'm going to let Wayne jump in here, but a lot of people kind of didn't respect the military. That was kind of that last choice after you didn't get to college and things didn't look like too many good opportunities. People were going to the military, but you learn some very cool stuff. And, you know, when they talk about the best and the brightest that come out of the military, that's because of the training they get and they have access to. And it really is, you really do get some great, fantastic leaders coming out of the military. Let's go in and bring Brother Wayne Gilman in here, the legendary newsman. Brother Wayne, how you doing this evening?
I'm hanging in here, and I want to say congratulations to Byron and his family. And And also, belatedly again, I had a wonderful time at your little gathering the other night, Eric, and, you know, just was reminded to me how important family is. But with respect to the military, I've seen the sons shine a little longer than you guys. And the only thing I could say is that I came up in an era where the respect really was not there. I was among those who went down to Fort Hamilton when I was drafted and prayed that my I would not be accepted. And the only thing that got me cleared away in 69-70 was a school deferment. And when I look back at those days, you know, it was just a completely different mindset. My dad came to this country. He served in the war. Then he was treated like a second-class citizen after after World War II. My baby sister now just recently retired, and she had done well in the Navy. But, you know, and I think it's a special, it's almost like a religious calling, you know. If you want to become a priest or a nun, I don't mean to use the Catholic Church as a backdrop for that, but I think there's some people who are called, and they feel it's not because of low grades or anything. You have to have the stamina and the mindset to want to do this. And, you know, so I applaud those who do that to keep us safe. But I also feel that the government needs to do more to help those who have kept us safe. And under this current administration, well, you know, I need not even start. You know, all you have to do is just look at what happened in Iran a few weeks ago, the military base there. And, you know, the guy is lying. Every day it's a new lie. Every day there is a new canard to be told. And it's just freaking disrespectful. That's all I can say.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you know, we haven't been on since the State of the Union, which was the first thing that happened, and then the next day, you know, they let him off, the rest of his gang let him off.
Yeah.
And now this week, you know, he went on to got people fired Vindman, had some people fired, and now trying to influence the Department of Justice, making them let his boy Roger Stone off, and just you know, it's like a movie. This is really like a movie, the way it's happening, because you couldn't, this, you know, it's a movie plot. You could write it. Guy gains control of a country and dismantles every type of check and balance that he would have to come in contact with, and the fact that people, some people either see it coming and some people are down with that, or they're down with riding that out because they might achieve their short-term goals. You know, it's just kind of remarkable what these people are willing to go along with that want to maintain power in this country. I mean, when you think about how he treated John McCain, right? And part of what you were talking about, Wayne, is not wanting to go to the war at the time was that, you know, I assume it's around Vietnam we're talking about, also too, in terms of African Americans going to fight for this country and receiving the disrespectful and the just oppression that we continued to receive. You know, a lot of brothers wasn't going to fight for this country. And when you think about someone like John McCain, who fought to uphold this system of white supremacy, I mean, basically, not that he was actively riding in his plane talking about, you know, off we go into the wild blue yonder to uphold white supremacy, but the system that he lived in and the system that he was trying to support and save as a military man was a system that did, and let's face it, practice white supremacy. Mm-hmm. And I say that to say this is what this man sacrificed for this country, a war hero who upheld their society, their way of life, one of the supposed to be the most respected people that you could get. And here this guy comes along, not only disrespecting this man's patriotism, because whether you agree with it or not, you have to give respect to individuals who will lay down their life potentially for something they believe in. That's a certain type of individual, more than one who just talks the talk, you know. So you have to give a certain amount of respect to an individual like that, whether you agree with it or not. That's a worthy adversary, I believe some people would say. So John McCain deserved a certain amount of respect for that. But here comes this guy, never done anything for anybody but himself, never thought about putting his life on the line for anything other than, I don't know, maybe nothing. I don't know, but certainly not from a military standpoint. Here comes this guy and disrespects, desecrates the very memory of this man, not while he's still alive, but then has the audacity to do it when the man is dead, not even having the moral compass to know that you shouldn't talk about the dead. And the most disgusting thing about it is that his very, John McCain's very party turned their back on John McCain as this man desecrated his memory and disrespected him. This is who you were dealing with. This is who they've become. They care about nothing. Not even one of their own who gave his life, who flew in honor to uphold their system. They don't care. They care nothing about it. They have
the integrity to honor
this guy's contribution.
The thing that you're talking about honor, and I think that's a critical part of understanding and appreciating what decorum is. We just got to watch the Super Bowl on a couple Sundays
decorum
ago.
Decorum schmacorum.
And basically, when
that's
you
what the guy's saying,
when
right?
You play, right, but when you play Pop Warner football or you play any kind of sports, they tell you right from the beginning, it's not how you win the game, it's how you play the game. And the
that's
decorum
right.
starts with the coin toss. You come out, make no mistake about it, Kansas City and San Francisco wanted to kick each other's butts. Okay?
That's right.
I mean, it's a slobber knocker football, right? And you get out there on the field, and the first thing they do after the coin toss, even before the coin toss, captain of the red, meet captain of the white. Shake hands. And at the end of the game, after you've done kicked each other's butt, your camaraderie is you line up and you salute your victor. You salute your loser. You shake hands again because it's about honor and valor. Now, take that to the people's house called Congress. It's by invitation that the President of the United States is allowed to come to the Congress at the invitation of the Speaker of the House. It's her house. You don't walk into somebody's house and not salute them. He gave the speech to the Speaker of the House and refused to shake her hand. Failure of decorum. Failure to respect the house of the people. And at the end, her presentation, ripping that, shredding that, very appropriate. You don't come into my house and disrespect me. You will come to my house, you will respect me, and if you're going to sit down and have fellowship with me, you're even going to pray with me. And that's how they started that, with a prayer. Remember that. And then he walks off the field, no valor, no honor, just a punk.
Well, the interesting thing about that, Byron, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I tell you, I was willing to give idiot a pass, thinking that he did not know what the protocol would be. You know, maybe he did not watch enough of the State of the Union addresses to know that that was considered protocol. But what I really am PO'd about is that the
you know it's his third one, right, Wayne? You know, it's his third State of the Union. This is his third year in office, so...
Yeah, I understand that. He has done it before. No, I understand that. But the deal is, you know, he is so consumed with himself. He is so consumed with anger and rage for this woman that regardless of what goes on, instead of him, it's like what happened today with the bar situation, although I think that's a whole other story, but I really think that was something contrived. You know, stop tweeting. And yet he depends on this man's support to continue his AG. The deal is, what got to me is that the press made a big stink about her ripping up the speech. And I really felt that was a problem because it was done obviously they didn't look at the disrespect that happened at the very beginning, but right away they wanted to call attention to something that she didn't agree with, you know, and many people did not agree with.
Yeah, I heard them. I heard it mentioned just as much the handshake. I mean, I heard certain press outlets talk about him not shaking her hand as much as the ripping up of the speech. I thought looked at it as the speech was all lies anyway, so why have it around?
Yeah,
you know.
The guy gets
up and just lies. You're lying about everything that we just said. Just telling a whole different lie, and you're giving away stuff. Everybody's getting a car, and that's great that the brother got claimed and little girl. But you gave Rush Limbaugh. I think just not too long ago. I was talking about Rush Limbaugh's racist comment about black quarterbacks. When somebody tried to, I forget which idiot tried to put him a part of the sports and one of the Sports Center's football broadcasts with Chris Berman and Tom Jackson and Keyshawn Johnson, I think, when he made that statement. And here this his co-racist gives him the Medal of Freedom or whatever. This guy, Rush Limbaugh, who has said blatantly racist stuff. And this guy gives it to him. So he's worthy. That he's worthy. And I guess he is worthy in their eyes to do those things. What ticks me off about the press and also the Democratic Party, I think, you know, I have just as many harsh words for our party that we're just punks, you know. It takes someone like Joe Scarborough to continue the correction of this economic recovery is Obama's 11th year economic recovery or whatever, and that the Democratic Party, I said this before, does not assign a committee, a person, or somebody. Your only job is every time they talk about the economic numbers, stand up and say that's bull stuff because Barack did this, that, and that. You're welcome. That's your only job. Every time they get on the press and say the economy and related to Trump somehow being responsible for it continuing the progress it made, get on TV and say that's BS because Barack did this and that, you're welcome. But what do we do as Democrats? This is why I wonder, are we supposed to win? Because we let this idiot say all kind of stuff, all kind of lies, and there's nobody there responding to every single lie he says. We just let him get away with saying it and don't say nothing about it. I called us the punk ass Democrats because we don't want to win. That's the one thing
Go ahead. Not to cut you off. I really think there's a lot of division within our ranks still. You know,
We're the punk ass Democrats. We're the punk ass Democrats. We want all this mealy mouth stuff. That's why Bernie appeals to younger people, because younger people want action. Traditionally, when you're younger, you want action. You're tired of hearing everybody talk. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So Bernie Sanders seems like he's passionate about what he's saying. When you listen to the man speak, there seems to be passion coming out of him, not false passion. Not made-up passion, real
but
passion.
I hope people
that's
are
what
not
we need.
Mesmerized.
We need someone. We need. Let me finish. We need an individual who is ready to go after this guy. We need to stop wanting to play like we're the Democrats, so we got to be all we're right and everything. In a street fight, you got to learn how to street fight. You know what I'm saying? When somebody brings you down to the gutter, and sometimes you just got to get it on. Some people just want to fight you. Some people don't want to be your friend. And then you got to take your jacket off, come out in the street, and get it on. Like the greatest of all time said, we don't get along, so we got to get it on. And sometimes it has to be that way. And that's why Bloomberg is looking like a potential candidate as much as we hate it. You know, but go ahead. You were getting ready to say, well, I didn't mean to cut you off because there's some place else I want to go.
My problem is, and again, I'm not a heavy Bernie Sanders fan. I mean, I'm going to go with the party, you know, which way, because the objective here is to get this idiot out of office, you know. And I know that Bloomberg is now going through a lot of scrutiny because he's come into the race. Of course, he's got money, so there's the jealousy thing that he's New York, you know. And then they go back with the stop and frisk. Never once talking about how Giuliani created that nonsense in his administration. And but they're beating up on him because he's the flavor of the month to be beaten up on. You know, how dare you come in and upset the apple cart?
I don't know if I agree with that, but go ahead.
No, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, everybody gets their taste of criticism, you know, but the bottom line is that I don't know, I was in the corner with Smokey Joe Biden, hoping that, you know, he was going to come out swinging, and especially since this man made such an affront on his family, and knowing how emotional and passionate it is that he was about, you know, losing his son and all that business. Sometimes that could be the kinetic energy that you need to go and fight back and go toe-to-toe. But I'm also looking at the situation that, you know, was the situation in Ukraine thoroughly discussed, because there's some people out there now, it's like the Joseph Goebbels story. You tell a story long and strong enough, you tend to think, well, maybe there was something there that we overlooked. Or, you know, why is this such a big deal? That people are not looking at the black and white, that he had no business, you know, to be calling on a foreign government to interfere in some domestic issue that he's trying to achieve a second term based on. And that's it. And then a lot of the people who are outside of the New York area don't know Giuliani other than him being America's mayor. You know, they don't know the level of racism and the degradation and the stuff that your mom and I covered back in the day with Giuliani.
Okay, stop right there. Where Giuliani's coming into this discussion, because why? You kind
of
lost me.
He's coming into the discussion because of the whole orchestration that he's done for Orange Man over Biden.
Oh, okay.
That's okay. The correlation I'm trying to form.
All right.
You know. But, you know, Giuliani, Central Park, yeah. Giuliani, stop and frisk. You know, you could go on and on about, you know, what Giuliani has done. And the thing, at the end of the day, he is the one who has basically more problems and created more problems for Donald Trump. He's created more problems for Trump, you know. So, I mean, and Trump is too stupid. You know, I hate to use that word, but the deal is that the level, he is so consumed by his own ignorance that he's allowed this man, who is a megalomaniac in his own right, you know, it's almost like as if they're twins, you know. Both have trigger finger personalities. You say something critical, right away he's ready to go for the jugular. And there's no difference with Trump, you know.
Yeah.
That's
kind of the New York attitude, right? It's kind of the kind of gangsterish attitude.
Well, you know, I don't
want to
be labeled that way. I grew up here.
kind of the gangsterish kind of, as you understand, I'm sure you understand as well, also too, the kind of the gangsterish attitude that is labeled sometimes with New Yorkers, particularly with a guy like Donald Trump. Not really. I mean, him and Rudy are the same. So particularly those type. But Trump is like, you say something to me, you know, it's just like the movie script, like you've seen the scene in the movie. We're going to get them 100 times more. We're going to hit them back. So that mentality does not lend itself to one that governs traditionally. You know, that's why you said, you know, you mentioned protocol. I was thinking about that earlier today, that this guy doesn't follow protocol. Like I said, protocol. He's making it up as he goes along, and he's also doing a lot of stuff that probably a lot of other presidents have done over the course of time in history. Who knows how many people really, how much power they really abused. You talk about, I mean, let's just use the attorney general as one small example. JFK made his brother the attorney general. Now, if you could imagine how that must have looked at the time, straight making your brother your number one justice officer, that really probably looks pretty bad. Turned out Bobby Kennedy was a righteous, justice-seeking gentleman. Nothing like this piece of a person that's in the attorney general's office. But still, Trump looks at those examples, looks at the things that Nixon did, learns from his mistakes, looks at the things that George W. Bush did. I mean, there's really the blueprint for a lot of the stuff that he's doing now. People forget that George Bush came into office under nefarious circumstances.
Yeah.
He got elected or appointed under nefarious circumstances. If you look at the footage, they have footage of him and his brother sitting next to each other on the plane talking about, oh, we're definitely going to win Florida. Of course, you know. And, of course, the goodwill or the naivete of the typical Democrats of Al Gore thinking that he was going to depend on Florida for any electoral votes when the man's brother is governor. You got to understand that there might be some cheating going on. We understand that you want to look at things with integrity and assume everybody's going to be right and honest, but I keep telling these people that an honor system only works when the people in the system have honor. And if they don't have honor, then you might as well go ahead and, you know, don't worry about where you're going to hit. There ain't no below the belt. There's no above the belt punches. All everything is game. And this is the problem I keep having with the Democratic Party, where it's like Charlie Brown as Lucy pulls the football away. We constantly, constantly do this. And let me just say about the Sanders, right? We talked about Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, I was mentioning earlier that he's least feisty and everything. But here's the thing with that. You know, when he didn't get the nomination before, he pretty much dropped out. He pretty much did not campaign for Hillary Clinton.
Exactly.
She should have won it on her own. She didn't do the right thing. But, you know, him and his people, they went away and decided not to vote. And a lot of those young people and a lot of those kids that decided not to vote, well, some of them had the luxury of not having to vote, because some of them have the luxury of not being at that group, that social economic group that is most vulnerable to the whims and decisions of presidents. I'm talking about people who depend on public assistance, people who depend on their checks getting in the mail, because when the Republicans decide they want a trip and not elect a continuing resolution, that affects people who depend on government checks and things like that. So I say that those are the people that are most vulnerable to the whims of an unsympathetic to the population, to the citizens of the country, when you have a party that's unsympathetic to those needs, right? So Bernie's people decide not to vote. But you know who didn't have the luxury of his supporters that could not afford not to vote? Was all his black supporters, all those young black kids who said, well, I'm not going to vote either because, you know, thinking that they have the same rights and enjoy the same freedoms in America that the white kids who said, I'm not going to vote do.
Mm-mm.
See, it doesn't affect them as immediately as it affects us. So y'all want to stay home and do the same thing that you see the white kids do or people do that you think that gives you the same luxury. You ain't got that same luxury. So that's why that's what makes me a little upset about Bernie Sanders when, you know, the Democratic Party decided to go with the Democrat because he wasn't independent. But I'm not mad at you now. Just be aggressive about it. But
I hope my nephew's listening, because I hear what you're saying, Eric.
As we go further into the election and we look about the electability of people, the only other person to me, I mean, there's other ones that are feisty and all that and have the energy, Warren, and I'm not a Klobuchar fan by any means, but you know, the other reality is Bloomberg. Mm-hmm. And he's got the attitude of Trump. He could go after him, but it's this race issue that he continues to have. And it's interesting how there's always, when you find someone who might be electable, we already knew that about Bloomberg, but it turns out Klobuchar had an issue in Minnesota when she was a prosecutor. There's some things she could have done that would have been more sensitive to the black community. And it's always interesting to me, as we pull back the layers of these onions, that the issue that is always underlying with the majority of these candidates is an issue with black people, as if the issue of dealing with the needs and concerns of African Americans has always been a bargaining chip. Like, okay, well, maybe we can, you know, we could sacrifice their needs for the expediency of the party or the expediency of my campaign or the expediency of my office, even though Bloomberg, yes, inherited stop and frisk from Rudy, but Rudy was a Republican, and we already knew Rudy was a racist. Mike comes in like he's going to be the unifier. You do stop and frisk, even though you know while it's going on that the statistics don't hold up. Okay, you didn't know. But all this stuff that keeps coming out that he said and the whole redlining thing, which, you know, is kind of out of context, but it's just every layer we pull off, it's like something else you've done that is going to be not as – that's not going to be as acceptable to our community. And as we think about supporting them, because we need a billionaire this election. They got their billionaire, we need ours. And hopefully we have enough billionaires on our side to beat all their rich billionaires. That's what this shit is about.
Exactly.
You know?
And I hope we don't lose sight of that. Because, I mean, the thing is, I got to know Bloomberg a little bit in the beginning. And I don't really, I mean, you know, as I tell everybody, especially people who don't look like me, you have no idea what it's like to be walking the streets as a black man in my shoes. Or a black woman, for that matter. As I would not know what it's like to be a Jew, whether Orthodox or unorthodox, what it would like to be a Muslim or someone of Asian descent. You know, I don't know what issues firsthand other than what I read. But the bottom line is that if you see an injustice and understand that an injustice is occurring, then I have to say at least you've made the effort to understand me halfway. The very first trip, and it's going to get a little discursive here, I met the late actor, surprised he died just this past week, Kirk Douglas. He died at 103. And he had written a piece for the Huffington Post, and I had the actor, Michael Douglas, is father.
Right. I know. I just said R.I.P. to Kirk Douglas, but go ahead.
Yeah. But as a Jew growing up in upstate New York, you know, he understood all the problems that Jews and people of color were going through in his generation. And he wrote a piece for the Huffington Post not long ago about that, how he would like to see, as he passes on, that this country finally comes together and basically heals from all the racial divisiveness and the political divisiveness, and understand that, you know, we're not built on what somebody's trying to contrive to work for their own, you know, political expediency, that there is a check and balance system here. And I wish I had a copy of the article, because I read it a while back, and then I also understand that he did something recently before he died. He expressed something to his son Michael, you know, with regard to how people of color have been basically been given a short stick, you know, throughout his time on the planet, 103 years. And feels that there's a need for change. And I'll just never forget the day that I met him. I grew up in Brooklyn. We didn't run across movie stars, you know, every day walking the street. I don't know if your mother was on that trip with us, but we had a chance to cover the Republican convention back in, early 2000s or whatever. Sometime in that period there, we were all going to San Diego. I'm out jogging, he's jogging, I'm turning a corner not knowing that he's running in the opposite direction towards me, and we both knocked each other down. I looked at him, and I said, I know you, you know? And he said, well, I don't know you, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, I mean, I couldn't come up with the name right away, but I knew it was somebody important. And from that moment on, you know, not to say that I'm close to the family or anything like that, but I just said this man had a certain amount of integrity and understood. And when I saw him write pieces for the Huffington Post, I was just, like, really amazed by it. But I think this is the problem that we're facing right now. And I don't mean to monopolize, but I want to hear Byron's thoughts on this as well. But, you know, it just saddens me that we're living in this particular era where there's so much stuff that we have to undo now, because this man has had 3-4 years to just, you know, you said desecrate, I said defecate, you know, on us, period.
Well, you know, the thing that I was going to say is that, remember, the objective of the entire Biden investigation was to do what? Knock Biden off the top of the presumption of the Democratic nomination. At this point, it has succeeded, and because we're going to do it by any means necessary. So he loses Iowa. He loses New Hampshire. But here's the problem with both New Hampshire and Iowa. Iowa, the caucus system, revealed that it was a system that is archaic and continues to crash because it is about not engaging inclusiveness. There are black people in Iowa. There are people of color in Iowa. But when you look at the delegates, and I want y'all to remember this, go back to the 64 convention in Atlantic City. What was the issue of Fannie Lou Hamer seating the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party against the segregationists of Mississippi? And the compromise that was given to them was two delegates, and they rejected it. So that by 68, when they went to Chicago, all hell was breaking loose in the streets. You may recall that wave. Is that ultimately they got seated, and the Democratic Party, which was catering to Dixiecrats at the time, those Dixiecrats, Strom Thurmond and his crew of Southern Dixiecrats, left the Democratic Party and became Republicans. That's what happened.
But
and
you know,
so
the only thing
look
about
at
Iowa.
And now going back to about Iowa, but also about New Hampshire.
Let me just say this real quick. The only thing about Iowa is that it's first. There's no real major significance other than that they just want to be first in the country, and it's a caucus. It's not even really they're not even really voting. And where their caucus, I understand it was when it was the way it was broken down by Rachel Maddow. When you actually understand how they run the caucus,
right,
it seems minimally scientific, you know. So I mean, same thing with New Hampshire. They're second. That's the only major significance. It's not that, you know, they try to, you know, like everything else in this country, give it more significance than it deserves, because, and obviously, perhaps those are to the more wider areas. I don't know. I would suppose probably that's why they give it the significance. But everybody, you know, the general public that is unaware thinks that there's more importance to Iowa and New Hampshire than there really is, and it's just that they're first and second in terms of their primaries or their voting.
But see, the Democratic Party has a bigger problem. Their bigger problem is that the more you don't hear the African-American community recognize the culture, the votes that they bring to the table, and people of color, the Democratic Party has some very quick notions to make up here very quickly, because when Super Tuesday hits, it's on like popcorn, as they say. And there's no looking back. And the looking back point should have taken place weeks ago when they had 20-some people on stage vying for attention and recognizing the fact that now you have no people of color in the lineup. Wang has dropped out. Deval Patrick has dropped out. And you're looking at people who are supposed to reflect the party. And the party's reflection right now has no color. And that's going to be a major issue. I don't care what state they go to, and because when you add up the popular vote, most of that is as a result of people of color in big cities, not the plain states, not the, you know, out there in the Iowa and the waving wheat states, you know.
When you add up the popular vote.
Yeah, when you add up the popular
Well, that's our problem, because they've got
the electoral
so to speak, card to pump. Yeah, they're a Trump card of the Electoral College, A, and B. So until that is overturned and that is taken out of this system, that's when we're really going to have an assessment. And two,
well,
also,
Stacey Abrams called it correctly. She said, blow up the system by showing up to vote. Because at that point, the weight of the vote is going to determine. In fact, she won the suit recently against the state of Georgia so that they cannot purge those votes. Okay? So you may not hear it, but that's what's going on. The circuit judge said, no, you cannot just purge those arbitrarily, and ultimately they will be counted. And what's going to be revealed with or without Attorney General Barr is the schematics
of how it was done. Because, see, that's
how the oppression was done, okay. Right. But here's
that's
the thing. Decisions can be made and rulings can be handed down, but if people aren't going to comply, it's like handing out subpoenas. They ain't showing up for the subpoenas. So we need to get to the point of what's the consequence? What is the consequence that these cats are going to have to go through for their actions? And right now, there are no consequences because we're living with a lawless government. They're just doing whatever they want to do. And this guy owns at least the Senate. He's got to respect his gangster because he doesn't own a judge. He owns the Attorney General. Wow. And the idiot is trying to act like he's not doing what the dude wants to do, except you can't make moves right after money tweets. So that's why I said it's like a movie. It's like a movie that you know what's going to happen. It's like a bad movie because you know what's going to happen next. And every time one of these things goes down, you're not surprised at all. You know, and that's the crazy thing to me.
You
it's like
you got to keep your hope alive and keep the Constitution alive. Remember, guys, a year ago, we were talking about
man, you need to keep your warrior spirit alive, man, and all that.
That's
I mean,
right.
The hope is
keep
great, but you got to have to be men, people of action.
You got
to be people of action. That's the problem. We've been having too much hope all 400 years. Got to be people of action.
And,
that's what I'm talking about.
People are losing their spirit and becoming depressed because they think there is no hope. And reality is, a year ago, we were all calling for an impeachment. Well, everybody was saying he's never going to be impeached. Well, I'm sorry to hear to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, this is the third president in the history of the United States that was impeached. And like a dog tied with soup cans tied to his tail. Wherever he turns that corner, we're going to hear him coming. And you're going to have to keep pounding him every single day that he has been impeached. And I have a feeling that there will be another article of impeachment before we even get to the election.
But here's the unfortunate thing about that. Here's the unfortunate thing about that. He ain't paying no consequence, bro. Yeah,
doesn't matter.
So what? He's still up there.
It's the optics.
Okay.
As we think about this, one thing that America
it does matter because what he's doing right now, he's demolishing things. It does matter. That's what I'm saying.
Of course,
that's
it does.
Great that we take the process and we follow the process and all of that. But there needs to be and people need to understand. It's like we've gotten to the point now. Action. Get this guy out of office.
Okay.
Let's not have
Absolutely.
A split about being mad that we don't support one another. But action. Get this man out of office. And there's individuals who don't understand that action is needed now, not talk, not being upset.
That's right.
It's action. And if you're an individual that you're not hit hardest or hit immediately when this guy does some stupid stuff, then it's really not that important to you. Because if you could lay back and say, I'm going to sit this one out or I'm not going to do this or whatever, then it ain't that important to you. Then it's not about revolution to you. It's not about oppression to you. It's about, I could ride this out. I'm good enough. You know?
Too many of us think that way, though. That's the problem.
That's what
I'm
saying.
Too many of us think we're going to ride this out. You know?
That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm,
yeah.
You know? And we don't speak up enough, man. It's like I'm watching now Chris Hayes as we're talking about this idiot Jim Jordan, how this guy's been able to be so vocal, such a vocal, righteous, upstanding individual for Donald Trump, and didn't say nothing when the other coach was up there abusing the kids when he was a wrestling coach. And this idiot's going to get up there and somehow remake himself to be someone that's respectable, and we're not going to attack this guy as being the dirtbag that he is. This is what I'm talking about with the Democrats. We hoping, we playing by the rules and all that, and that's great. But we got to let them other cats come out the basement every once in a while, you know, and let them know we mean business.
And I agree. And thank God that we have a free press because, I mean, there are some of us who are very committed to unearthing things and bringing that to the fore because there are a lot of people who manage to reinvent themselves and you wonder, well, how the hell did they get there, you know?
Yeah.
And if you, especially if you know something about them, you know? And I've seen that in our own community. I mean, I ain't going to call no names tonight, but, you know, it just amazes me. Yeah.
Absolutely. What do you guys think about the Bloomberg possibility? Because, you know, I try to find myself, try to wrap myself around that possibility. And this is what I was saying earlier, Wayne. Each time I do, there seems to be another layer that's pulled back that shows that he just was willing to bargain, use black people as the bargaining away chip, the chip that he could, you know, throw away if he needed. And he's not the only one that does that in terms of politicians, in terms of how they've been doing African-Americans. But what do you guys think about the possibility? I mean, we need someone like him that has those resources. And I like the fact that he's willing to go after this guy toe-to-toe, you know. And I'm interested to see him on a debate stage with Trump to beat this guy. But, you know, when I talk to my friends that have been in New York and certainly talking to my cousin Keith Wright, former assemblyman uptown in Harlem, it's like, yeah, everybody was, you know, people were getting stopped all the time. And I personally think that if you want to make up for it, Mike Bloomberg, go to Harlem, have a town hall meeting, face the music. Go to Queens, go to Brooklyn, have a town hall meeting, face the music. If you really want to act like and say you didn't really realize, and sorry, black people, what I was trying, his intent was good, right? Because most of the crime, yeah, it's in the communities, I guess, but there's the reason for that crime being committed, right? Because the people have turned on themselves because of the condition that society has put them in. That's why you might find a little bit more crime in those areas. Not because those groups commit more crimes, because just have a predisposition to commit crime. You know, that's what I'm saying. It's the nuance and the fact that these people are willing not to point out the nuances and to let the stereotypes of our people be perpetrated when they know it's not true for their own expedient needs. That's what I'm talking about. Every time I wrap my mind around, maybe this guy, there's something else comes out, some stuff, racist stuff that he says. So I'm asking y'all, what do y'all think? Like, how do we get our minds wrapped around it, if it's possible at all?
Well, I think, you know.
Hey, Wayne,
Byron.
Here's the deal. And personally, I find it really hard to vote for another guy who's already shown that he can pervert the system. He beat the term limits. He spent over $8 million to get buy into his office, okay, for the third term. Now, we got one guy in who's already perverting the system. And I want to put another guy in.
Apparently, New York were down with it, though, weren't they?
Well, they had no other choice, okay? And they basically were muscled and strong-armed into doing it. But here's the issue. If we're going to fix our system, one of the best things that I think has happened for the adjustment that had to be made, whether you liked it or not, was to stand with the Constitution. The minute you start perverting rule of law, you're going to go all the way to pervert the rest of it, not cherry-picking it. And that's something that's consciously, you're right, I think I heard Auntie Maxine say it very clearly, that the candidates that are still remaining, none of them have ever gone into the black community to find and figure out what we want. Oh, they'll make that Sunday visit. They'll make that drive-by visit. You know, let me just stop by, get a photo op. And that's what Bloomberg did on the Sunday he went to CCC, Christian Cultural Center. He did a drive-by for a Mea Culpa moment. Not good enough. You want my vote? You better come with some policy. I don't need a promise. I want policies. Every month now, the black unemployment, you cannot run a $1 trillion deficit and then try to convince me the economy is really running on all 8 cylinders. Impossible. Not having it, you're cooking the books. The unemployment rate is creeping up. And when you compare the statistics of jobs created over the last 3 years, he has yet to beat Obama's last year of employment.
That's right.
Okay? Not one period, not one quarter or one month has he been able to surpass what was already created. And my thing is, if you've got a stock market that's up over 29,000, you've got to be able to create more jobs than 144,000 jobs. That's what are those jobs? That's no jobs. You mean you got trillions of dollars bankrolling into your stock market and into your stockholders, and all you can create is 144,000 jobs. You know, don't tell. You know, that's the question that has to be asked by a lot of these running mates who are now out there saying, okay, well, we can compete against him, but you're going to have to compete against every single lie that he throws up against the board. And I'm telling you, they're going to have to start attacking the economy. Social programs? Yeah. I mean, it's easy to cut social programs. It's only, 3%, 4% of the GDP? And you're giving 67% of your money to the military budget? It doesn't take a mathematical genius to figure that if you get 67 cents out of every dollar to military budget spending, you got 23 cents left to use to take care of the 98% of the public that you're not taking care of.
But that's not his. That's just not his administration. That's what America does. That's our budget, right?
That's right. But you remember Obama got crucified for beginning to cut the military industrial complex budget. That's when they went after him.
Because
he was reducing the budget to give more to social programming.
Well, the deal, and this is what the Republicans hate about us, is that the minute we have an opportunity to control that budget, when we have an opportunity to control it, it goes back to where it should be. The focus should be on the interest on the people who are really affected, by the lack of social programming and things like that. And I think earlier what you were trying to say, Byron, was beginning to blur the lines between Trump and Bloomberg. You know, I admit that all these white people will have something to have to answer to on one level or another. You know, I covered Trump back in the day, and this is the first time that he managed to seek elective office and was successful by stealing it. You know, Bloomberg, I got to meet at the beginning of the century. He was a longstanding Democrat when he was a media mogul, you know, running his company and developing Bloomberg Broadcasting. But the only reason why he became Republican is because he could not find a place when he was running for mayor. I think at that point there were so many candidates, and he just figured that he would just go the opposite way, you know? And that was it. The deal is that I will say that since his departure, you know, I know that he wears that stop and frisk thing as his moniker, but he's done a lot to go out there to get guns off the streets. He's gone to different communities that have been affected, different municipalities that have been affected the same way in New York. I just heard the former mayor of Philadelphia tonight, you know, promoting what Bloomberg basically endorsed, what he had been doing after leaving office just to get the guns off the street. He's given money, you know, to different organizations quietly without having to, go around blowing a horn about what he's done for certain social programs and benefit certain candidates of color. Even in the last election, the congressional elections that we've had, he's contributed, you know. But as I said at the very beginning, you know, I can't expect to understand the psyche within that white mind, because I'm not a white person. You know, they perceive things a certain way. But if you see there's injustice, if you see I'm bleeding and you're bleeding the same red blood, then there's got to be some commonality of interest in understanding what is going on out here, and we have one common enemy to defeat.
So, Wayne, you keep saying, you say that to say that just as long, I'm not understanding why you keep saying that you're not one of them and can't see how they see the world. I'm trying to understand why, what you mean when you say that, I guess.
Well, I guess my point is that, you know, the deal is that we're living in a culture right now that I just think that, you know, whites are afraid to give up whatever privileges that they've had all this time. And
course,
again,
yeah.
you know, I think that's really what's the underpinning of what we're going through, because this country is about to go through a metamorphosis in a few years, not just because the increasing numbers of people of color who are coming here, but the fact that so many of us have now achieved a certain level of acceptance, recognition, and status that was not there before. So the struggle continues, but it's a question of acceptance. And I'm not just saying in this community, but again, we have all these white guys and women seeking to run the country. And Byron, you brought that out earlier about the fact that there's no one really of color involved in this game anymore. But the bottom line is that I don't know internally where the mindset is. And yes, maybe going to a church service, showing up at Sharpton's one Saturday morning is not enough. You know, I agree. But there are also things that have been done without people knowing. And I don't know. I just happen to feel... I saw what he's done with Dennis Walcott, the Board of Education.
I get you.
I saw what he did with
I mean, but all that is great, but the thing he's most well known for is the brothers getting stopped. When you talk to average brothers on the street, I got
the
friends.
I got
friends who
were
stopped every day. I mean, I understand
Juliet,
all that.
Stopped.
Right. So all I'm saying is that those good programs that this guy did, right, that many in his position have done that have had similar problems when it comes to our community, the issues that our community is confronted by, has to deal with, those always seem to be the ones that they can sacrifice, that are sacrificable. Okay, well, issues dealing with black people, oh well, the objective is to stop the crime, bring the crime rate down, so we'll institute this policy or we'll continue this policy going on. But what about the civil liberties? Oh, well, that's one of the things the sacrifices will have to make. They'll just have to sacrifice some of their civil liberties so we can get the crime rate down, as opposed to, like I said, understanding in the community that when you walk out your business to your car and some jackass asks you where you're going because you're a black man and you fit some profile, or you've given the discretion to individuals, I'm talking about beat cops, not all of whom might not be able to have the mental capacity to use that discretion properly, there's a problem. And that's all I'm saying. So this guy's done all this great stuff, great, fine. But the thing that you're known for, and then when you each time you've had an opportunity to say, okay, well, maybe I realized I was insensitive to the community, so here comes the exonerated five. They deserve all they should get, but no, I'm not going to give them as much money as they. I'm gonna put a cap on their stuff. That sends a sign to the community that hey, this guy, you know, when the going gets tough, we're gonna be the first ones that he sacrifice. You know, all I'm saying is that I'm trying to find a way to because I think eventually this guy is going to be the strongest candidate, because clearly, to me at least, Joe Biden is not a strong candidate. I don't think it's what the damage that Trump has done or tried to do or tried to bring up about Joe Biden's family. I think it's Joe himself. Joe is too old, and that's what we're seeing. You know, he's not the old Joe.
And Bloomberg,
he's not the old.
And Joe are around the same age, I guess.
Right. So, and Bloomberg is a little bit more, you know, sharper. So, you know, unfortunately, that's where we are with Joe. He's lost a step. I mean, if we're talking about Vice President Joe or old Joe who used to say stuff off color every once in a while, that's the Joe I wish we had. But he's clearly, when you see him, when you actually experience one of his debates, you see that he's slowed down and lost a step. But, you know, that's just my opinion, but I think that's what's happening in the race. We got another 90 seconds, so if you guys want to tell the people your sign off, we've had a hot discussion. Obviously, we need some more time to talk about these things, because we didn't even get through all of the travesties that are going on. But Byron, tell the people your goodbye from down there from Texas. All right, Byron. I guess you said goodbye to us. Wayne, you want to give the people the last word goes to you, my brother?
Well, peace and love always.
Well, I hope I didn't
remember,
do anything
that's right.
Handle.
Oh, there he is. Well,
no,
oh, there
peace
he is.
And love always, guys. Peace and love always. And remember, the power of change is in your vote. Use it. Because if you're not part of the solution, you are the problem.
Brother Byron Saunders. There it is. Well said. See you again next week,
amen.
My brother. All right.
Peace out.
Brother Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman extraordinaire. What's the words of wisdom for the people?
I'm going to quote Jesse again this week. Keep hope alive, brother. You know, I know we need more than just hope, but you know, that's the only thing we can go with. You know.
All right. There it is. K Thompson Live.
Right.
So thanks, Wayne. Talk to you next week. This has been the K Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm Citizen Payne. K Thompson Live on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be again next week. Maybe earlier in the week, late in the week. We'll let you know. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon. I'm Citizen Payne, Wayne Gilman, Byron Saunders, K Thompson Live. Bye-bye.